We recognize that there is only one life, one power, one infinite presence that is all there is throughout the universe. This one life expresses itself in all the ways that we can see and all the ways that we cannot see. This one life creates all things out of itself and has created each of us out of itself. And so I know that we are one in that one life, living and moving and having our being as that expression of God, that beautiful expression of beauty and peace and joy and love. And as we express all of those beautiful attributes of God this day, I know that we are a blessing to our gathering, to this divine appointment that has brought us here together. And so I speak my word to know that this time together is blessed. It is a blessing. Every word that is spoken is a word that is expressing fully and completely as spirit through all who speak. And every note of music, every song, is that beautiful, vital expression of spirit that lifts us up and inspires us to a higher level of consciousness. I'm grateful for this time together. I'm grateful for this time that we have set aside to recognize the presence and be a part of it here. I'm grateful for the law that works upon my word to do its perfect work. And so in this gratitude, I release these words, knowing it is already complete. And we can all say together, and so it is. And now I invite you to continue to keep your eyes closed and just move into that silent place.
So I want to talk today about a topic that was different than the one I originally was going to talk about that I scheduled a few months ago. But this one came to me about a month ago and just said, talk about home. Talk about home. And so the title of it is Home for the Holidays. And home is, there's a lot of attention on home right now. Have you noticed? You know, whether it's people who've lost their homes in fires or floods or other events, whether it's the homeless who live in the city and all of the cities. How we feel about going home for the holidays. For some of us, it's like, oh yeah, I want to do that. And others of us, it's like, not a chance. You know? And I always remember the Ram Dass quote, if you want to know if you're enlightened, go visit your family. I think it's go spend a week with your family, which some of us can do around the holidays. So, that's always a good thing. And we've talked, off and on here, and it came up recently about a new home for our own community, our own home. And so, so that idea of home is something I want to explore today. So what is home? Is it a building? Is it just a place of shelter? Is it a place in space and time that maybe has existed in our memories at one time? What is home? Take a breath and just notice what you feel about that. So at this time of year, many of us long for a home. You know, we get all these wonderful movies about going home, don't we? And nice classical Christmas movies and family movies. And for some of us, it's like, oh, that's so sweet. And others of us, it's like, yeah. And so we think about home from a previous time or a wished for time. And it's, you know, sometimes we wish for the kind of home that we see in the movies. You know, that wasn't my home Christmas experience or Thanksgiving experience. Usually Thanksgiving was a fight. Every Thanksgiving. And Christmas wasn't much better. And so, you know, that wasn't, so some of us have a longed for time, I wish it would have been the way that I saw it on TV. And some of us have an old memory of what it was like when we were young. But what if home is none of these things? What if home is none of these places or times? What if it's a state of mind? What if it's a state of mind? You know, there's the saying that home is where the heart is. And so where is my heart? Where's my heart? Is it in the present? Am I at home now? Do I feel at home now? Or am I looking backwards and wishing for something that was in the past? Or am I looking forward and hoping for something that might be in the future? Can I be home now? And if home is a state of mind, home is a place that I can be in right now. It doesn't matter what the surroundings are, right? Home is a consciousness, a state of mind that I can choose to be in. So if we're looking backwards, the flow of evolution, the flow of life energy is always moving which way? Forward. So if I'm looking backwards, I'm going against the flow of life. And I can tell you from experience, I've tried that. It doesn't work. Sooner or later, it kind of, you know, flows back into my face or flows me forward. So for all of our longing, we can't go back. We can't go back. You know, a few years back, I was in Portland, and I was showing my wife, Cynthia, the house that I grew up in. We pulled in across the street, and I was just mentioning it. And there was a guy unloading a moving truck into the house. And he kind of like was looking at us like, you know, what are you doing here? And so I just kind of rolled down the window. I said, I'm just, you know, showing you this. You know, this is the house I grew up in as a kid. And I was just showing it to my wife. And he said, would you like to come in and walk through it? And I said, well, yeah, I would. And so I walked in, and I couldn't go back. First of all, the rooms aren't as big as they seemed when I was a kid, right? Some of those rooms seemed huge. It was, you know, they weren't. And the house had been lived in by a lot of different people since then, and had been lived in hard and not well taken care of. And so it's like the structure, the basic was there, but the essence, the energy of it was gone. Which in some ways is a good way, because that was also kind of a house of a lot of pain for me. And it was interesting because the room that had been my bedroom as a teenager was locked. I couldn't get into that room. He said it was just storage and stuff in there. But it was interesting that I couldn't return to that part even in the house. So it was just interesting to walk up and down, and I talked to him about some of the things that had been in the house at the time and stuff like that. We can't go back. That place is gone. I mean, the physical structure still stands, but the place, the energy of it, is gone. So the question is, do we really want to go back home for some of us? There was a cartoon I saw on Facebook recently that showed this family of a mom, two kids, sitting in a cave, kind of shivering, and their dad had walked in with a fishing pole with a fish on the end of the line. And she's looking at him, she's glaring at him, and she says to the kids, this is your dad's fault. He said to Alexa, Alexa, make my life simple and easy to understand. And we're back in the caveman days. Make it simple and easy to understand again. So home is an idea or a concept. Like everything else, begins with a thought. It begins with a thought. And like all thoughts, most of our thoughts are based on memory. Unless we're tapping into something else, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, we're just recycling what we already know. Recently, there was an article showing what the face of Jesus would have looked like based on archaeological digs and some drawings of the time. And of course, Jesus wasn't this lovely, flowing-haired Nordic, you know, God with blue eyes standing there. He was Jewish, you know, so he had olive skin, nappy black hair, dark eyes, you know, and probably was all of about 5 foot tall. And although they didn't mention it, I figure he was probably a little bit pudgy because two different gospels, he describes himself as other people calling him loving food too much and being a drunkard. That was Jesus, by the way. And one of the people that was on the minister's listserv said, well, I don't think we should have any images of Jesus at all in the church. Just let people have their ideas of what Jesus is. But most of us grew up with an idea of what Jesus looks like, right? And unless we change that idea, unless we present new information, we're going to be stuck when you say Jesus of this guy with, you know, the long flowing brown hair or blonde hair, whatever, and all that stuff. And so we have to change it. You know, some churches have a laughing Jesus that they put out, which most of us, not, you know, as if we grew up in more traditional religions, probably never saw the laughing Jesus. You know, so it's starting to change the idea of it. So when we think of home, we can build on the same old ideas we had. We can duplicate an old idealized version of home. We can try and do something completely opposite of that. Remember when you grew up, you said, I'm not going to be like my parents? And you grew up to be what? Like your parents. Because when we're fighting against something or trying to duplicate that, we're still doing that thing. We're not in a fresh space. And so both ideas of trying to recreate what we had as a child or trying to create something that's far better than we had as a child. If you've noticed people that get obsessive about, I've got to have the best Christmas and the best Thanksgiving ever to make up for the ones I didn't have as a child, yes? And so whichever one we're doing, we're still in the dualistic thinking. We're still in dualistic thinking based on memory. And so what if we ask different questions? What if we move past memory or dualistic thinking? And what if we ask, what does my soul or my spirit want to experience now as a home? As home. What is my soul? Not my mind, not my intellect. What is my soul? What does my heart want to experience as home? And so take that in some place in your life. Take that question and ask it of yourself. It doesn't necessarily have to be your residence that you live in, but maybe it's someplace where you want to feel at home. Maybe it's at your work. Maybe it's in your spiritual center. Wherever it is, maybe it's in relationships. How do I want to feel? What does my heart want to feel at home? Some of you know that I've told the story of landing my house here in Olympia when I moved here. And first I couldn't find, a whole lot of places when I was looking online. And I finally said, what does Spirit want to live? What's the house that Spirit wants to live here as me while I'm here? And within a couple of days, I got an email from Jan Smith, who she and Linda Bremer had been looking for a place and for me. And I give them a basic core description. I would like 3 bedrooms and 2 baths and some light and like that. And I got an email from Jan saying that the place right across from where Linda lives had just opened up and gave me the address. And by the way, I'd had a little kind of as I was sitting contemplating that question, what does Spirit want to live as home? I had this image drop in. And 2 days later, I got the address and it was that image. It was that image. And many of you have been to my home and know it's a lovely place to be, a lovely place to stay, lovely place to party. And so we teach classes out of there. I have my office there. We do meetings out of there. And it's the place where Spirit as me really does want to live. And that place seemed initially out of reach. It seemed initially I couldn't get that nice of a place for the kind of money. And yet all of that sorted itself out. So what does home really mean for you out beyond dualistic thinking? What does it really mean? And are you willing to let go of old ideas to open up to new ones? See, when I first saw that home, it's just like the first thought that popped up was, oh, I can't afford that. That's going to be way too expensive for me. And when I decided, no, I'm not going to hold on to that thought, I just heard it kind of come through. It's like, no, not hanging on to that. And of course, then some of you know the landlord decided that he wanted it for below market value because he wanted somebody who wasn't going to build a meth lab, which I just have a small one, okay. And he wanted somebody who'd be stable and respectful. And he lives next door, so he wanted somebody that would be a good neighbor for him. And so it came out at below market value. So are we willing to let go of those old ideas, to open up to new ones? Because the only thing that stands between our experience of home, of what we really want to experience, are our fears and our old beliefs. Take a breath. The only thing standing between us and what we really want ever is just the place where we limit the flow of Spirit. That's the good news, bad news of this teaching, right? It's like, oh, dang, I don't have what I want. And the only thing, I can't blame that out there. No. We start with a change inside. So we have to release those to let something new come forward. And it can feel like a death when we've let go of some of those old ideas because, no, there are. This is true. I'm really attached to it. I know none of you are, but you've met people who are really attached to their old ideas of what things are and how things are, right? Okay. Richard Rohr says, your usual viewing platform is utterly inadequate to see what is real, capital R, real. It is largely useless to talk about the very ground of your being, your true self or your deepest soul, until you have made real contact with these at least once. He invites us to have that direct experience of our soul, of our deep part, of our deep self. Not just talk about it. We can talk about it. We can read about it. We can know about it on a surface level. Do we make the contact? Do we take the time to do that? He goes on to say that that demands dying to the old viewing platform of the mental ego and false self. How many people want to die? Yeah. And yet we have to. Not necessarily physically, but we have to die to these old ideas. There's just no way around that. If you do make contact, you forever know that something is there that can be talked about, can be relied upon, and can be deeply trusted. When we make contact with that infinite presence, when we take the time to get there at the gut level, we know that it can be supplied, that it can be relied upon, that we can trust it. The universe is constantly, in a way, asking us, do we want our true joy or do we want a shadow facsimile? Do you want what you really want, what your heart really wants, or do you want a substitute for it? Do you want to settle? Well, I really want that, but I'll settle for this. You've known people like that, right? None of you have ever done that. And so the universe is always asking us, always giving us these opportunities. Our true home is within ourselves. And it can never be lost or destroyed. The stuff can be lost or destroyed, right? Time passes, we move away, a fire happens, something happens, we lose the physical structure. But the home. See, I had an experience of that with my dad, long after he'd passed away. And I'd grown up being taught that my dad was a horrible person by my mom. And he died when I was 16. And by the time I was 40, I'd kind of been through enough group therapies and stuff, and I'd heard stories of dads who were horrible dads. And he didn't look like any of those. And so I finally decided I was ready to make peace with him. And I decided to go back and visit his gravesite down in Portland for the first time since he died when I was 16. And so I went down and I took Eileen. She was all of 7 at the time. And smaller than that? I think it was 7 or 6, whatever. Whatever, young. They're arguing with me. Never tell stories about your kids when they're in the house. And it was the day after Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving and a few days before had been raining, you know, typical Northwest weather. But that day was a beautiful sunny day. And he's buried in what's called Mount Scott Cemetery, Mount Scott Hill, which overlooks the southeastern portion of Portland. So he's on this hillside, found his grave, you know, after a while. And I'm sitting there trying to have a meaningful experience with my father. She, meanwhile, is running around having a fabulous time on this beautiful grassy hillside on a sunny day and playing and having a good time. And I don't want to shut her down, but it's sort of like, you know, internally I'm going, will you please stop so I can have a meaningful experience with my father? And after about 5 or so minutes of that, it got kind of quiet and I couldn't figure out. And so I looked around behind me and there was a couple graves over that had an urn on the top of it that was full of water. And she was sitting there with this switch, this kind of long stick, flicking it in and out and in and out of the water. And I said, what are you doing? And she goes, I'm fishing. My dad had been a fisherman. And he would have loved to have known that his granddaughter was fishing beside his grave. And it still tears me up a little bit, but it definitely teared me up that moment. And just like brought me, you know, to that heart space. I remember looking back at the gravesite and went, there's a box of old bones in here. He lives here. Our home is in here. We can never lose it. Our home, the real spiritual home, the real soul home, is here. And we can never lose it. We can never gain it, by the way. It's just here. All we can do is become more aware of it and open up to that. All the forms, all of our forms, come and go, don't they? The Hindus have a saying that everything that has a beginning has an ending. Everything that has a beginning has an ending. One other way to experience home is just in our own bodies. Are we at home in our own body? You know, I've been dealing with that for the last couple of days especially. I threw out my back on Friday morning. I was doing the strenuous exercise of clipping my toenails. I think where it actually started was a couple days before that, I had built up two IKEA bookshelves and loaded them up with all the books that had been sitting in my closet for a year and a half. And I think that probably put the stress on it, but Friday morning it was just all of a sudden tweak. And it was one of those, I was talking with, I think, Danny about it, where and Brent, where it's like, you know, crawl from one end of the house to the other end of the house, try and find, you know, to find the number for my chiropractor who hasn't been in the office this weekend, and then crawl back into the shower and turn on the hot water and loosen up the back, you know. Obviously, I'm standing today, so. But I got to look at body as home. Do I feel at home in my body? Sit with that for a moment. Do you feel at home in your body? One of the things I became aware of quite a while ago was that my energy went up to kind of about halfway between my ankles and my shins. I never quite wanted to touch the earth energetically. So it's like, I'm not here. When I was living in Reading, I had still half my life in boxes, even though I was there for 3 years. Never unpacked a bunch of stuff. When I got here, I unpacked it. And I actually took a step this past summer. I've had this maple, Japanese maple tree, that I've been carrying around in pots, ever enlarging pots, for 6 years. And I finally asked Doug Pape's roommate, Steve, who was doing some work at my house, and I said, I'm ready to plant that thing. I'm ready to put it in the ground. I'm ready to declare, this is where I'm staying. This is home. And it was a symbolic gesture. Now, I don't own the house. I rent the house. But it was a symbolic gesture of, I'm here. I'm staying here. And so, do we feel at home in our bodies? Do we feel at home? And so, when we're not, you know, I got to look deeply at my own feelings of what is it was going on about this back thing being out. What was the deep core things that I was feeling? And to take a look at how I was out of alignment with in areas that I profess to believe and what I say are true, what I know are true. And I'm out of alignment, like the spine, kind of at the deep core level, right at the base, you know. And so our bodies are our first and primary experience of home, along with the earth itself. Do we feel at home in our bodies, and do we feel at home on the planet? Based on what we see around us, there's a whole lot of people who do not feel at home on the planet. And are we willing to say, yes, this is my home, and I'm going to ground into it. I'm going to be here in that consciousness of love, in that heart space. So if we're courageous enough to look deeply, to really pay deep attention, we can observe our beliefs and our resultant feelings about home. And initially, that can be disturbing. It can shake us up. You know, there's a couple of things that came up that it's like, I don't want to look at that. I shouldn't be I'm a minister. I shouldn't be feeling this, right? Right, Michael? Practitioners, Reverend Carey. Yep. And of course, we all sit here as religious scientists and go, I shouldn't be feeling this because I know better. But the thing is, we have these deep old beliefs that sit there and continue to work at a very deep level until we finally face them, and sometimes it takes a great amount of discomfort in some level of our lives before we'll finally take a look at them. And finally say, you know what, I'm no longer willing to carry that around with me. It's the only way that we can free ourselves of the old and manifest the truly new is to get past these old beliefs and these old fears and where we're stuck. When we do that, however, it frees our energy. It frees up our energy to live with a full passion, to live with a full conviction that is necessary to manifest our good. Because it takes passion. How many of you have just wished for something? And has it really shown up in most cases? It's not until we do, Raymond Charles Barker calls it the good, hard mental work of choosing and deciding and not backing off until it shows up. That's when we have manifest in our lives what we want. And that can happen quickly. That can take a long time in some cases. But are we willing to actually do that work? We have to have that conviction. We have to have that passion to actually have to live in a home we love, in a world we love. And that's my intention for each of us, for myself and for each of you, is to create lives we love and to live in a world we love. Would that be okay? Great. So it is. So this week for a spiritual practice, I invite you to do basically just one thing, and that is contemplate the idea of home. And you might take a look at someplace that feels uncomfortable for you, where you feel outside of home right now. It could be within your body. It could be within your physical space. It could be within your relationship or your non-relationship. It could be with your finances. It could be anywhere in your life. Take a look and contemplate the idea of home. It could even be on the planet itself, on this planet itself. It could be in the center. Several people have expressed we'd really like a home that we don't have to set up every time and looks a little more sacred and whatever. Take a look at the idea of home. Sit with it. Contemplate that. What it wants to open up? What is the higher idea? What is it that your soul, your heart, your spirit within wants to experience in that area? And open to a greater idea. And pay attention as you do that because to what comes up. Because you'll hear the thoughts to say, nope, don't deserve that, can't have that, can't afford that, all that stuff. And all that stuff is on the way for you to pay attention to because that's what's in the way. And I can't know what's in the way until, guess what, I surface it, right? Dang. I wish I could just wave the magic Harry Potter wand and make it all go away, but, you know, we got to do the work. So pay attention to what comes up and recognize that it comes up for the purpose of healing and release. It comes up not to block you, not to make you feel bad, but so you can pay attention to it. I think I quoted Louise Hay last week when she says, you can't clean your house unless you can see the dirt. Can't clean your house unless you can see the dirt. And so you don't necessarily contemplate the dirt. You don't spend a whole lot of time, wow, look at that piece of dirt. How did that piece of dirt get here? I'm going to have to think about how that... No, you get the piece of dirt out, right? But you have to see it first. You have to see it first. And so just notice what comes up as you contemplate home. Notice what comes up as what wants to be... Your soul wants to open up, and notice where it is that you shut that down real quickly. Because I know we shut it down because otherwise we'd be there right now. Good news, bad news. Take a breath. So that's your spiritual practice this week. Contemplate the idea of home and then pay attention. Are you willing to play with that this week? Great. I'm going to close with a pair of quotes. The first one is from Richard Rohr, who says, some form of death, psychological, spiritual, relational, or physical, is the only way we will loosen our ties to our small and separate false self. Only then does it return to a new shape, which we might call the risen Christ. We might call the illumined mind, whatever name you want to give it. The soul or the true self. What dies? Your false self. And it is just a matter of when, not if. We're all in the process of dying to our small self. Who lives? The God self that has always lived, but now includes you. Our small self keeps us separate from our true nature, our true God self. So the God self that has always lived now includes you. And note, that it's a what that dies, and it's a who that lives. You are your God self. You are not your small thinking. And if nothing else, to come to that place where you really know that and take the time to feel that. Then I'll close with a quote from Rumi, who says, play the flute of felicity. And felicity is a lovely word that simply means joy, passion, eloquence. Play this flute of the full life. You yourself are the melody. You yourself are the melody. Let's move into prayer. So knowing that there is this one life, this one, nothing else but that. And it is at home within itself, in every way, in every place, in every second, because there is nowhere else to be. It is the pure love, the pure joy, the pure light of this universe, the life energy of this universe. It is the power to create. It is the peace of knowing that there is nothing in opposition to it. It is the beauty that is a result and the joy that we experience because of this creation. That is all there is. The purpose of life is joy. And because that infinite presence is all there is, because there is nothing outside of an infinite, each and every one of us is one of this infinite presence right here, right now. And so we are all, in truth, at home in every aspect, in every way of our life, right here and right now. This is our truth. And so at home, we move into that experience of the life energy, of the love, of the light of wisdom, of the power to create, of the peace that we know from knowing that there is, in truth, nothing in opposition to our creation, of the beauty that we create and the joy we experience because of that. This is our nature. This is the capital T truth of us. When Reverend Carey says that a practitioner knows the truth of you, this is the truth that a practitioner knows. And so I speak my word that each of us moves into a greater and greater awareness of this truth, of this knowing, of this deep, deep, not knowing about, not just having it as a nice idea, but absolutely experiencing it at a core level, at a gut level, at a heart level, at a soul level of who we truly are, how magnificent we truly are. This is our true nature. And then I'm grateful for all the beauty that comes out of that, all the expression that comes out of that, all the joy that is manifest because we are truly tapped into and aware of who we truly are. We don't have to reach somewhere else. We already are it. We just clear away the fog of consciousness, of old ideas, and stand in the light of the truth of our being. And so in that space of gratitude, in that sense of thanksgiving, I simply release this word into that which we call the law, that which moves it into form and expression and experience in our lives. We don't have to figure out the how. The mind gets wrapped up in the how. It just needs to know the what, and the universe takes care of the how. If we're truly focused on the what, the universe handles the how. And so in letting the law do its thing, do its work, do its action, I know it does. I know it manifests this in each of our lives here and now. We affirm that together by saying, and so it is.
So in the teens room, we learned about tapping, and EFT is the main tapping thing that's out there right now. It's called, it stands for Emotional Freedom Technique. And it was created by this guy, wonderful guy, and we watched a video about it, and it told stories of people that had like incurable diseases or pains or emotional things, mental things, and they were all cured. And things that were thought impossible by the medical world were cured using EFT. And we learned that it could be used for anything. And to just go up on the video and YouTube and search EFT, and you can find videos on anything. And it was really helpful and really knowledgeable and awesome.